Welcome to Brandon Hall Group's HCMX Radio, the only podcast in the HCM arena that weaves current market research, HR technology, and industry leaders into each episode. Brandon Hall Group is a research, analyst, and advisory firm that provides strategic insights for executives and practitioners that are responsible for learning, talent, growth, and business results within their organizations. Our focus is on ensuring continuous business performance. Our research practice areas include learning and development, talent management, leadership development, talent acquisition, HR, and workforce management. Our HCMX radio host is Rachel Cook, Chief Operating Officer and HCM Analyst at Brandon Hall Group.
Hi, this is Rachel Cook. I'm the COO and the host of Brandon Hall Group's HCMX radio podcast. I'm excited to meet with Diane Haynes from Open Sesame and Steven Sklarov from Synaptic to chat with me today about the curation of content and artificial intelligence, or also known as machine learning. A little bit about Diane before we get started. Diane has over 20 years of experience working in marketing, product marketing, and management in software, healthcare, and biotechnology companies. With a Bachelor of Arts degree from Cornell University and a Master's degree in Economics and Management, Diane helped co-found a startup and has worked at large corporations such as Sage, Oregon Health and Science University, Agilent Technologies, and Bechtem and Dickinson. She is passionate about serving customers and helping them solve their business challenges. Welcome, Diane.
Thanks.
Also with us is Steven, who is the CEO and co-founder of Synaptic. Steven started his career at Ernst & Young and has over 20 years of experience as management consultant and technology product leader at startups and public companies. He built and managed globally distributed teams, creative, productive partnerships, and led tech due diligence for numerous technology acquisitions. He sold and delivered services and products to companies in technology, healthcare, financial services, entertainment, automotive, and education industries. Most recently, Steven was CTO and VP of product at three innovative SaaS-based product companies using big data, machine learning, mobile, and cloud technology. Welcome.
Thank you.
So we're going to talk a little bit about artificial intelligence and machine learning and what's the future looking like in the workplace. And I did share a little bit about both of your backgrounds, but I'd love to hear from you or each of you. Can you share a little bit with our listeners today so they get to know you about your background, your and what makes you so passionate about this industry? And I'm going to go ahead and start with Diane.
Sure. Thanks, Rachel. Yeah, I mean, I think if I look at over my career that most of my roles have always been at companies that were leveraging technology to make people's jobs easier, frankly. And I think that's been the hallmark of high tech, biotech, whatever you want to call it. And it's really exciting, I think, now even still, because we're starting to see this really come to fruition, not just in our professional lives, but in our personal lives now, too. So it's really kind of cool to see that, you know, when I was growing up, it was the Jetsons. I'm going to date myself a little bit. But
I remember the Jetsons.
Do you remember the Jetsons? Yeah, right?
I do.
Yeah, so that world seems so, like, in the future. And I feel like, you know, we're doing video conferencing. People have robots who are maids. I mean, if you think about a lot of the things that were shown in the Jetsons, a lot of that's actually coming real now. And so that's been pretty exciting. And I've always been part of companies that were like that. And I think, you know, now at Open Sesame, we're all about helping companies train their employees, which is a passionate area for me. Obviously, I've been an employee for many years, and training has not always been the funnest thing to do. And so it's really exciting to be a part of a company that's helping companies make training more engaging, more interesting, and frankly, helping employees be more productive. And so that's why I really enjoy what I do at Open Sesame and working with folks like Steven to kind of bring the technology so that we can help companies really transform their workforces.
That's great. And Steven, can you share a little bit about your background as well?
So, like Diane, I have a lot of passion around helping people be productive. So we actually worked together at another company, and we both had teams, and we really enjoyed helping young professionals grow into, you know, productive employees, and helping more mature or experienced professionals, you know, learn how to grow in new areas. You know, what I'm seeing is that for the last 40, 50 years, this technology, machine learning and AI has been around, but not applicable. And, you know, due to processing power storage and data, you know, all that stuff is now becoming an impetus to use technology to help people become better at their jobs and their lives, as Diane mentioned. So I'm really excited about it. You know, I started personally getting into this space back in 2008. It was a little early, and it was new to me. But one of our co-founders has been doing this for the last 25 years, and it's just amazing for him to think that all of a sudden this is the cool thing, because he spent, you know, 15 years or so kind of doing something that everybody thought would never have any outcome in the real world. So I'm very excited about the application here, and we're seeing a lot of applications across multiple industries, across multiple functions, and we're excited to, you know, help businesses apply that because it's quite difficult to get into it for the first time.
Absolutely, and it's interesting that you mentioned that it has been around for such a long time, but it hasn't really come to the forefront that it has up until most recently, and I feel that we're still at the very beginning of it. And there's so much that companies need to go through and learn and adopt and figure out.
Right.
From your perspective, how would you describe AI and machine learning technologies, and how are they impacting businesses?
Yeah, so I think the core, and this gets, you know, really mixed up in the media that you read online and whatnot, but the core is data, right? So without data, there really is no AI and machine learning. And so I think, you know, from our standpoint, you really got to, you know, focus on the data first and foremost, but couple that to business process or business objectives that have real impact for the organization, you know, whether those are cost savings or revenue generation. It's really important to kind of couple these higher-level business objectives with data that's available that you can activate, you know, to make an impact on those objectives. And I'm not sure
that's
if I answered your question, but maybe you can re-ask it, and I'll answer it a little bit differently.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I was going to mention was I was in London last week, actually gave a talk on this topic, and what was interesting to me was, you know, I remember the days when at companies, you know, the way you tackled problems was you just hired more and more people and just threw bodies at it.
Yeah.
And there was almost this fear, and I think, you know, we talk about this, Stephen, there was almost this fear that AI would take over and we humans would no longer be needed, right? That's the insidious side of it. But the reality is, I think if people have realized that a lot of what you'd say more the routine work, maybe you want to call it the grunt work, really should be more automated by technology, and we shouldn't be throwing bodies at that part of it. We should be throwing the human brain power at the more complex issues that are out there, and that the two can coexist. And so I thought that was kind of an interesting conversation that I had with my audience last week, was around that part of things and how automation is not a bad thing and people are worried about losing their jobs, but it's actually a good thing. It's creating new jobs.
Yeah.
So I think you're seeing a different – I think there was a lot of fear in businesses before, and it's gotten more and more accepted and more understood, and I think reality is more urgent. I mean, most of the clients we deal with, most of the customers we deal with, it's all they want to talk about is digital transformation and automation. So I think we got over the fear part of things, and we're now into the now what do I do and how do I do it.
Right.
That's often what companies are coming to talk about.
Yeah.
And I think because it's so prevalent everywhere, right? It's not just in the workplace. We're experiencing it in our homes, in our driving, it's just everywhere. There's not an area that you can go to without some sort of automation happening.
Yeah, and for me, it really started with, you know, kind of the Google search, right? You know, that was kind of the technology that we all thought of was search, but behind the scenes, yeah, there's a lot more complexity in automation and machine learning that makes all that work. And now we're just seeing that come to the workplace in the last couple of years.
Right.
Can you, let's talk about some of the clients that you're working with. Can you share some examples of some of the success stories?
Yeah, so I can talk a little bit about some of our clients and what they're doing with artificial intelligence. So I actually, a couple weeks ago, I was in Peoria. Makes it sound like I travel all the time, but just has been a couple busy couple weeks. But I was in Peoria. It was -8 while I was there, visiting one of our customers, Caterpillar, out in Peoria, Illinois. Most people know who Caterpillar is, right? I mean, they're the big, I call them the big earth movers or anything movers, right? Like they push everything around. And one of their major facilities is in Peoria where, and this is happens to be a service facility where they bring in their dealers to train on these gigantic machines. I didn't get to drive any of the machines, so that would have been good. You would have loved it, Steve. But when I went, you know, the reason we were there was to shoot a customer success video. But what's interesting to me that I learned is part of the reason they bring dealers in to learn the machines there is these dealers who sell the Caterpillar machines to companies all over the world also have to service them. And one of the things that we learned from them was, for example, how they're using natural language processing, which, you know, Stephen can talk a little bit about, and some of the artificial intelligence. They have service technicians all around the world that are all working on these machines, and they're encountering the same problems, but they're all trying to individually fix them different ways. And so what they've started to do is actually aggregate all that data, like Stephen referred to, which are essentially service reports. I mean, think about something as mundane as a service report. And basically aggregate it and use artificial intelligence and natural language processing to find the best, I guess, the best path forward for servicing. So rather than, you know, imagine Stephen walks up to a machine. Imagine instead of him trying, you know, steps 1 through 5, if he was told, actually, you can skip 1, 2, and 3 because everyone else tried that and that didn't work. But when they had success, it was really step 4 and 5 you should try. So they're doing some really interesting things in an area that you'd think would be very blue collar, right? And very much based on, gosh, these people have years and years of experience servicing machines, but they're harnessing all that knowledge and all of that, I'd say, interaction and experience and spitting it back out to technicians so that they don't have to make the same mistakes, so that they go straight to the, I guess, the best, most successful probability of what they should do to service that machine. So that's one example that that I bring up for Caterpillar. Is that what you were looking for, Rachel?
That's fascinating, and that kind of triggers that we had another example we had from Verizon at our conference. They did an innovation session on augmented reality, and they had their technicians that were out in the field use these devices to help with their performance support and to help them in areas that are, you know, are blue collar, but, you know, but there also can be a lot of risk factors when they go out there and they service the lines and they have to climb up on the ladder or the poles. And so examples like this really help them with reducing time and risk involved in their interactions.
Absolutely. And you know, for these companies working in shipping and logistics, you know, predictive maintenance becomes really important, where they have sensors on their equipment and they can proactively maintain equipment before it breaks.
Right.
There's all sorts of applications there as well.
I mean, the other one that comes to mind for me, which is more, I'd say, in the heart of what we do, which is training and learning and development. One of our customers, Air Methods, you know, what they do is essentially they do medical transport. So think of life flight, helicopters, you know, all the terrible things that happen, right? And what they do is they're using machine learning in their training to basically adjust the training and sort of adaptively. Basically, they'll assess, let's say I'm a new employee and I start taking some of the tests. Based on my test results and how I'm answering, it's going to identify the skills that I'm strong in and weak on. And actually, instead of just putting me through the same test that Stephen goes through, it'll actually, they're using machine learning to adjust their training curriculum. And so it's personalized for me based on how I'm doing. So if there's certain areas I'm very weak in, I'm going to get more of that than maybe Stephen per se, who might be really strong in that area. You know, we've heard a lot about personalization and adaptive learning in training and development, and that's a great example of where one of our customers, AIR Methods, is using it to adapt their training in terms of new employees.
That's great, because that's we've seen so much in our research, the desire for personalized learning, and in order to really maximize the opportunity and how you can how you have a greater impact on your programs with your employees, and also engagement, because if they're doing things that they don't really need to be doing, then what's the point, right? So,
right.
But when you can personalize it and you're really honing in on the areas that they need help in, and then they see the results and they see that this is making a difference in their performance and also the business, and you can translate that becomes more fruitful for everybody.
Yeah, and one of the things that's starting to happen is kind of more of a just-in-time approach to training, right? So as you're working on a particular problem in your job, you know, there's capacity for something to help you along the way that is automated. So there's been a lot of talk, obviously, around things like chatbots, but you know, there's various companies out there that are trying to install just-in-time learning in the desktop, you know, as you're doing your job to help fill in knowledge gaps as you go. And what's interesting for me is I started my career, as you mentioned, in Ernst & Young. And back in the day, this is in the mid-90s, they used Lotus Notes.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole culture was built around Lotus Notes, such that there was knowledge bases for new people to learn lots of information, you know, just ramping up into their consulting job without having to go find somebody. And now, you know, what I'm seeing is that same kind of Lotus Notes thing is becoming much more embedded into our workflow. So instead of having to go to Lotus Notes in a database and all that
right.
kind of stuff,
right.
Knowledge workers are and blue-collar workers are all starting to have this information targeted and available to them just when they need it, where they need it, whether it's on their mobile phone or on their laptop or their desktop.
Well, yeah, that brings up another example that I have. One of our customers, IBM, they have this cool thing, like if you're an employee, it knows if you're a new employee. So, for example, it knows if you're a new employee, and the first time you go to set up a meeting using whatever system they have to set up their calendar, it automatically sends you how to run a good meeting
right.
training.
Right.
Versus me, you know, having to go out and find that, it recognizes, oh, Stephen's only been here 1 month, he's never had a meeting, he's scheduling his first meeting, so therefore I should send him some training on how to run his first meeting. So I think that's just in time, like you brought up. I think that's a really great application of, you know, artificial intelligence into sort of the everyday of people's work.
Yeah, I did a lot of work in the kind of the sales and marketing space and, onboarding and training with organizations that have a lot of attrition is very challenging. So being able to get that kind of just-in-time learning to the right seller at the right time, you know, before they talk to a particular prospect is really key for them to, you know, transmit the right message to move the sale forward.
And so there's lots of technology. You both are talking about the experiential part of learning as well, because they're not just learning and going away, but it's becoming embedded in their in all that they do. So as they need it in the workplace, and that quick information is so crucial at times for making the decision or moving the needle.
Yeah, and it's you know, from one dimension, it's getting the information they need when they need it, but it's also reinforcing that information so they remember it.
Right.
So there's various tools out there that now, you know, use things like machine learning to remind you about information so that, you know, you learn how to retrieve it, you know, actively in your job.
And that's really important, is being able to retrieve it. And we know, we've seen a lot of studies on brain and neuroscience, and there's only so much that you will comprehend, whether it's, you know, in the amount of time frame. That reinforcement factor is necessary for long-term benefits.
Absolutely.
What are some of the best practices in getting started if you're not a data scientist, or what kind of advice can you give organizations if they're at the very beginning of this, the very beginning of looking at how to incorporate it in their organization?
Yeah, so it's a bit tricky. On one end, I was mentioning, you know, how data is so important. And a lot of companies will get stalled out because they throw up their arms and say, our data is a mess. You know, and it's too hard to change the data, or we need to spend a couple of years fixing our data. But the reality is you really need to take an iterative approach. So in almost all of our client engagements, they start off with some, you know, very clear business problem that they would like to solve. But some slice of that business problem and data to go out and solve it kind of in a prototype mode. And we usually call those proof of concepts. So it's really important to get some momentum and not try to boil the ocean, because it can be very overbearing, and you can run into analysis paralysis just thinking about all the things that you can solve.
Oh my God.
And then you get caught up on the data. Finding, you know, kind of a place where you have a business problem and you have data to kind of back it up, building a proof of concept, and then using that as a ramp to start expanding the efforts is really, really, really key. The other thing that's fun is to have kind of like an ideation session, you know, between business leaders and individuals that know data, and to have, you know, various ideas up on a board and to talk about, you know, which ones are most feasible given the data available and the quality of that data, and really build out a roadmap of things that can be built over time. Again, thinking about, you know, kind of an evolutionary approach to the initiative, that's been very successful as well. But the key is not to dream up things that could help your business, but you don't have any data behind it, because those all often sound great, but they fall flat on their face.
Yeah, I was like, you know, Stephen and I presented on this topic a couple times, and one of the great analogies I think he has for this is that just like training people, learning and development people don't just go and build a bunch of training. They start with what their business is trying to achieve, right? They start with their business objectives first. This is no different than that, right? You can't just go build a bunch of training and not have it centered on your business objectives. So I think it's a great analogy that Stephen's given in other webinars about start with your business objectives, see what, you know, difficult problems you have and what data you have around those, and try some projects in those areas before you just go and try to unravel all of your data. So
yeah, and when you get really mature and have the skills either in your organization or through a consulting firm, then you can start doing longer term, kind of more complicated problems. But, you know, I've seen a number of companies now that have either brought in data scientists onto their team or hired a consultant and tried to solve a big problem and didn't get anywhere. And then, unfortunately, the organization is not interested in trying again for a long time, you know, which is probably a bad thing given the competitive market that we're all in.
Absolutely. And you know, it's finding the right balance and how to prioritize around that. So you've given some really good tips here in how to simplify or how to start small. And we, you know, we have that same, I think, approach too when we're helping companies is not to, whatever it might be, whatever new initiative, is not to try to tackle it all at once. Obviously make sure it's tying into your strategy and your business objectives, but start small and start to build some momentum and really kind of understand how to do it well before you try to tackle everything all at once.
Yeah, and I think the biggest challenge that I've seen, so I spent most of my career developing software products, and I think the biggest change here is you really don't know what you're going to get until you try it. So I actually talked to a lot of clients about the fact that data science is kind of more like art or design. You can't put a time box around it and say, you're going to get me a model that has 100% accuracy in 2 weeks, right? Whereas in software engineering, you define, you know, requirements, and your team can kind of build the software behind those requirements. In machine learning and data science, you take some data, you have a particular problem you're trying to solve, you build a model, and you see what kind of predictive power you have out of that model. And in many cases, it's nowhere near, you know, 80 or 90%. Right? And so that's really hard for people to get their arms around. We've had lots of projects where the results of a model starts off, you know, 60 to 70%, and everybody's, you know, quite depressed about that. But the reality is that, you know, 80 to 90% accurate model is amazing. And you got to think about how that is applied in your business, which is much different than a typical software product.
That's interesting. What are some of the challenges that you see that companies or people should be aware of?
So that's probably number one is you kind of got to think about how do I use a prediction to solve a problem. That takes some, you know, rethinking. The next one I would say is skills, right? So, you know, as you probably know, you know, data scientists are one of the highest paying individuals in the world right now. And it's very easy to try to turn someone into a data scientist, right? It's like, hey, go take this online course and you'll become a data scientist. Or, you know, it's very easy to hire someone that looks like a great data scientist, but actually they're not. And so it's very confusing to figure out, you know, how to obtain the right skills to actually do the job. And then, as I was mentioning before, there's kind of this issue of time boxing. Like we all, as managers, love to put a plan around things. And many data scientists come from an academic background, so they're used to doing more research. And those data scientists that came from an engineering background, they tend to have less, you know, kind of data science foundations. And so finding that right balance between research and execution and doing that within a reasonable amount of time really becomes a challenge for many companies. And that's why I was talking about the proof of concept approach, where you keep something small enough that you'll have an outcome. But of course, it's key to have the right skills as part of that project.
Yeah, I mean, Rachel, the other thing that I think is really important to know that people get challenged with is data scientists aren't all created equal either, right? So the data science, I mean, honestly, there's different facets of data scientists, right? Whether it be statistics or data visualization or machine learning or natural language processing. So the reality is, you know, you don't just put an ad out there and they're all created equal. And I mean, so a lot of what we talk about when Steve and I present on this topic is, you need to understand what you're going to do or what you need to find the right person, because some people are going to be more skilled at aspects of artificial intelligence and data science than other aspects. And so it's not a generic vanilla term. And I think that's the other thing that often happens is you might hire someone thinking, oh, they're a data scientist. Well, actually, what you needed was someone who was an expert in statistics. Or data visualization. So I think you have to be very, very careful about, you know, the skill set you're looking for versus the folks who are out there and available. And again, this happens anytime there's this new field, right? Anytime there's a new job out there that's like the hottest new job, the assumption is like anyone who's done that before can do everything, right? And the reality is that's not the case. And we've seen that quite a bit as we work with various companies. Is they make big assumptions about where people's data science skills are when they realize their project is not quite in that sweet spot.
Yeah, and on that point, I mean, as I was mentioning, you know, the importance of data, in almost every case, you need some sort of data engineer, someone that's going to help get the data into a good place before you can actually perform the analysis. And that ends up becoming a really key role to get into any of these projects is to have the data in a format that a data scientist can build models off of. And that skill is way easier to find, but it's critical.
We're also seeing the benefit, and I'm curious as to what your thoughts are, is having also the data scientists or the ones that are writing the code being diverse too, because we're finding when we're looking at some of the recruiting platforms or job screening or the way that some of the data is being interpreted, it can also have, it's impacted by who's doing the coding and how they are, and how they are identifying certain ethnicities or gender. And so that's another complex area that I think will evolve over time. What are you seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess what I've seen, and this kind of goes all the way back to my experience working for the Corporate Executive Board, which is now Gartner.
Sure.
I think it's really important to almost do like a paired programming approach between a data scientist and a business subject matter expert. So at Corporate Executive Board, we had a whole team that was, you know, doing what we call quant work. And those quant folks were part of a research organization. And the researchers worked hand in hand with the quant folks, because as you're building models and getting output of models, you need to think about the business and the data and how those two things work together for particular business processes. And so, you know, when we're working with clients, we have the same thing. It's like if we have a domain expert that really understands the business and they're working with us to build and understand the models, we get much better output faster because of that paired programming type approach.
One more question, two more questions, actually. So this is so fascinating, and there's so much happening in the environment and organizations and everywhere. What do you see, you know, going back to the Jetsons, how do you envision the future? And also, what should either new generations be thinking about? If your students are going off to college, what kind of skills will they need? And also, how are we going to retool or redevelop some of our existing workforce to have the skills to be able to handle where the future is taking us?
Yeah, and we're seeing that a lot with a lot of our customers right now, honestly, whether they're in technology or not, whether they're in manufacturing or hospitality. I mean, we're definitely seeing that now where they have populations of workers who are working longer now, right? Mm-hmm. And they need to be reskilled or upskilled, right, because they have great experience in their field or that industry, but maybe not the technical skills. And then secondly, you have this whole other generation of employees who are working alongside them who, you know, the dreaded millennial word, who have a total different expectation of everything's automated and why am I doing some of this grunt work. So you're having to balance what we find a lot of our customers are having to balance sort of the two parts of their workforce and getting them to work together and yet somehow deliver training to both, right? And what we're seeing is they can't. They have to actually deploy different kinds of training because those workers not only are generationally different, but their learning styles are very different. And so, you know, one person might be fine with watching 10 bursts of 10, 15 minutes each throughout the day. Other people might need to be able to sit down and focus and watch, you know, 2 hours and not have to be disturbed. So what we're so often seeing is that companies are no longer deploying, I'd say, single path or single channel training. They're offering a menu of choices so that the employees can, one, not only choose the delivery and how they receive it, but, you know, so that's all about when and how, but also they might also want to choose what they're learning about. And I think that's kind of the other part of it is what we see with a lot of companies going through digital transformation is teaching people how to be more agile and adaptive. Because if we think that this is the last time that there's going to be a digital transformation or some kind of cataclysmic change in business, we only realize that, you know, if you've been in business for the last 20, 30 years, it's only actually happening more frequently.
Right.
So what the skill we really need to teach, and granted, like I said, I'm not saying that we shouldn't teach the technical skills and everything else. The skill we really need to teach people for the future is how to adapt and change and move to where the puck is going. I think if you can teach people that and a resiliency around that, then all the changes coming along are much easier to deal with. And I think that's what we're seeing a lot of. It's, granted, people are investing in training on, okay, new programming languages, new automation, but they're actually investing. There's like this resurgence into soft skills, change management, adaptability. All of that is coming back, and it's no longer sort of, oh, we don't need that, because people realize that's the hardest part about all this change. So we're definitely seeing them, for sure, with our customers.
Yeah, I would just say that for me, it's kind of learning how to optimize how to learn. So
right.
To Diane's point, you know, I've been kind of in big product companies or consultants. And in both cases, it's like I love learning new things, right? And consulting is perfect for that. But not being scared of learning and having technology help you learn and optimize, you know, your personal learning style with various types of content so that you can learn on the fly, I think that's really, really key because things are moving so fast. And before you know it, you know, we'll all be plugged directly in the internet and things will completely change. And so I find it very fascinating. I think, you know, the Jetsons is still a little ways off, but I think in our lifetime we're going to see a lot of that happen. And if you don't embrace it, I think it's going to be very, very difficult for you.
Absolutely. And if you're in a company, if you're a company that doesn't embrace it, you're going to be quickly left behind because to try to catch up takes too much. So you have to start now.
Absolutely.
All great advice. Thank you, Diane and Stephen. Thank you so much for sharing your perspectives and examples of how you're working with clients and what we can expect the future to look like as it relates to artificial intelligence and machine learning and all of the, you know, everything above. So thank you so much. And just one last, is there anything else that you'd like to share? And also please inform our listeners if they do want to reach out to you, what's the best way to do so?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, if you're curious about what Open Sesame is doing, you know, we're using machine learning to curate training courses for our customers so that it's, you know, the machine learning is actually learning about you as a company and then recommending the best courses for your learners. We have a new product called Smart List that you can check out, and if you're interested in that, you can go to www.opensesame.com, and we've got some information about that. And if you have any questions or if you want to learn more, you can email me, diane.haines, which is H-A-I-N-E-S, at opensesame.com.
Yeah, for me, so our website is www.synaptic, that's S-Y-N-A-P-T-I-Q.ai. And, you know, if you're interested in contacting me directly, it's just Stephen with a P-H, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, at synaptic.ai. Again, that ends with a Q. And, you know, we're doing all sorts of things. You know, as I was mentioning, you know, in this conversation, you know, we help businesses get their data prepared for AI. We also provide mentorship programs for businesses that already have data scientists, but they want to grow their skills and have experienced people behind them. We've been building data platforms kind of end-to-end for companies, you know, so that they can launch new products. And we just enjoy bringing AI and data science into organizations that need more help in that area, particularly starting at the strategy level and working all the way down to an executable model.
Fantastic. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Diane. And thank you, everyone, for listening in today. If you have any further questions or would like to reach out to us, please contact us at success@brandonhall.com. Thank you and take care for now.